Hello, this is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net, and your host today on Global Radio Talk Show, coming to you from Old Town in San Diego and New York City. Special guest today is an old friend and a senior executive in the world of corporate business strategy, Philip Berry. He's president of Philip Berry Associates, based in New York, and he's the author of Being Better Than You Believe, 8 Steps to Ultimate Success. Let's say hello and welcome, Philip.
Hi, thank you very much. How are you, Ed?
Just great. Thanks for being our guest again. So I want you to tell me about the book, Being Better Than You Believe, 8 Steps to Ultimate Success. Is this a self-help book?
Well, it is. It's a strategic book. It's a book that enables individuals to assess where they are and how they move to higher levels of achievement and development. And in fact, it's something that individuals can use not only on a personal level, but also we anticipate that individuals in their work situation will use some of the steps that are outlined here to help them to improve. In fact, individuals in a number of different settings, everywhere from students to individuals who are executives in business, have used this and have used a number of the insights that they have received in order to help them to develop and improve what I call their personal brand, how they're perceived, and to work on a number of issues, a number of initiatives and actions that help enable them to move to higher levels of impact, which is what the book is guaranteed to achieve.
Okay, so this is supported by a lot of research, not to mention your own corporate experience with Colgate-Palmolive. Isn't this correct?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote the book is because when I look at my 30-some years, not only at Colgate, but at Procter & Gamble, at Digital Equipment Corporation, one of the things that I have found is that individuals that are looking at the position that they're in, whether they're a managerial or an executive position, they're saying to themselves, well, how do I progress? And what are some of the things that I think about? Is this all there is? And so I found that there are correlations not only in the United States, but also I've worked in over 60 countries around the world. I've lived overseas, and I found that this is something that individuals have been struggling with wherever they are, whether they happen to be in China or in Argentina or in Europe or France and South Africa. Individuals are struggling with the same thing. What is it that I need to do, and what are some of the steps that will enable me to get there? So there's a very practical bent to a number of the items that I talk about in the book in terms of 8 Steps to Ultimate Success.
Well, I'd like to jump aside for just a second before we get into global business. Can we talk a little bit about CSR today, corporate social responsibility? Is there a need for that?
Well, as organizations are looking at selling their products, positioning their products, one of the things that they need to be concerned about is not only how they are positioning their product to the consumer, but what is the impact that they're making from an environmental standpoint? What is the impact that they are able to make on a number of the other things that people are concerned about, the quality of air, water? Companies have an impact on these items. And so the whole issue of corporate social responsibility means that there's an enlightened interest that individuals have as they are operating in the countries that they're in. They shouldn't just be concerned about just making a profit. They have to be concerned about other things that people are concerned about as they're living and as they're working in these areas.
Being a good leader in challenging times, especially in the face of personal trauma and being upset in the marketplace, this is the mark of executive competency. Can you give us some insight? What are 3 key competencies that are critical for global effectiveness?
Well, one of the things that's very important is that we need to consider that if no matter what country you're operating in, and say right now we're living in the United States, we are operating in a global environment. When individuals sneeze in China, we get a cold here. we have to think about the fact that raw materials and markets as an interrelationship between what goes on in one country and what happens in another. We are no longer able to live in a silo country. And so as you think about going abroad and working abroad, then there's an understanding that needs to develop about how do you work with other people? How do you evolve so that way the skill set that maybe made you successful in one country can also enable you to be more effective in another country? So that's one thing. How do you evolve your capabilities and your leadership capabilities so that way whatever you did in, say, you're in the United States, well, that can also work in Germany. That can also work in Mexico. That can also work in Ghana. The other thing is that individuals, in order to evolve competency, your leadership competencies, the next thing you need to do is to have an ability to continually learn, continually adapt yourself and take on new skills and new capabilities that you didn't have before, because you're going to find that maybe what worked in one place because people are different. So you have this cross-cultural competence that is required. It's a different type of competence level that is going to be required in working in another country. And furthermore, in order to be fully functional in another country, you have to have a higher tolerance for risk and ambiguity. Risk means that you're going to try some things that you didn't try before. So you have to think about, well, how can I do something a little differently? How can I evolve and adapt so that way my skills, my learning can be just as applicable in one place as it is in another? And then from the standpoint of ambiguity, you have to understand that you're going to be dealing with situations that maybe you weren't as cognizant of, you weren't comfortable with before, you don't know as much about them, and so you're going to have to be able to have a confidence and be comfortable with the ambiguity that comes from operating in new environments.
So this is not just for CEOs or C-suite. This is for younger professionals going global perhaps for the first time. Many of our listeners, Philip, are millennials and don't have senior level experience, but boy, they're itching to go on assignment. And so all of this training, all this stuff that you're talking about is critical for these people, isn't it?
Well, it sure is, because you don't get to the C-suite without having a number of situations prior in your career where you have learned to adapt and grow in different situations. For example, when I was a VP of HR for different international divisions at Colgate-Palmolive, I was involved in sending individuals abroad, sending them from one country to another, and this is early in their career, because when you are able to develop those capabilities and that learning early in your career then and improve your skill sets, then you're going to find that that is going to do you well as you're moving to higher levels in the organization. So that's the best way to learn it, to learn good habits as opposed to learning bad habits. And millennials are distinguished by the fact that they're curious, they want to learn new situations, they want different experiences, they want the variety that comes from being able to work in different areas. And so this type of experience working globally really is great for millennials who want to broaden their mindset and adapt them and grow in ways that they haven't been able to before.
Isn't it true that there are some similarities culturally between, say, Southeastern Europe, the Czech Republic, or in Montenegro, for instance, relevant to Honduras or Colombia or some places in Central America?
One would find that there are similarities and differences in a number of different places, and you have to look at how individuals make decisions, what their team orientation is, how they communicate. You know, for example, some individuals will communicate in a way where they want to understand very specifically and directly what's happening. In other places, they will not only communicate just through language, but the nonverbal communication takes on more of a hold. So if I'm working in certain Central European countries, you can find some similarities, in fact, with certain parts of Latin America. I'll give you a specific example. I was working on an assignment where I was expanding the business opportunities in Romania. And one of the things that I found is that individuals needed to have an understanding of the terrain that they were working in, the people that they were working in, to understand the marketplace. So I moved individuals there from Guatemala and from Costa Rica because there were a lot of similarities that existed there. You know, in addition, in fact, with Romania, with the language, Romanian itself is a Romance language, and so it's very similar to Spanish and to Italian.
Interesting, isn't it? You wouldn't think there'd be any relevance at all. Okay, so what are the two biggest mistakes leaders make when managing outside of their home country?
One of the biggest mistakes that individuals make is when they go into another country, especially if they're coming from any country, but let's say the United States. They come from the United States, and they think that everybody is going to act and respond and should respond just like Americans do. And so, for example, they may give very specific feedback. Let's take a specific example of an individual going from the United States over to Japan or to China. And so the individual going from the United States might say, well, I'm just going to go over there for 2 days, and I'm going to make this business deal work. I'm going to seal the deal, and then I'm going to come back. Well, what happens is that you really need to understand and work with people a longer period of time. People want to understand and like you and understand more about you on a social basis before they would do business with you, before they would seal the deal. And so Americans who would just go over there and feel that they could make a very quick decision without going through and taking the time to work with people will find that they're going to fail. So that's one of the biggest mistakes that individuals make, that they go in with the same type of assumptions, assuming the same type of outcome. And one of the things that Einstein said, if you continue to do the same things and expect the same outcome with the same results, then you're going to get the same type of decision. What you have to do is you have to change the framework so that way you can get a different set of results because you have different behaviors that are in place. And the other thing is that there's a real need for individuals to continuously improve. If individuals are not willing to be flexible in some way, inflexibility is something that really hurts a number. Anybody from middle manager to an executive level, being totally inflexible and not willing to take feedback that will help you to grow. That's one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen.
And then demonstrating that you've done it and explaining yourself better, I guess. So as an executive coach, what's an executive coach?
Individuals who are in any type of a leadership position where you happen to be managing others, and you could be from middle management to senior all the way to executive management, there are capabilities that need to be improved. And what coaches do is they will go through a process of advising you and actually coaching you, providing input that will help you to improve as you are functioning and as you're growing in the organization. Basically what an executive coach will do.
Is there a specialty?
One specialty that I have is because of my international experience, I love to work with individuals who are able to use the data and improve. So like if they happen to be coming from one country to another, if they happen to be in a technical position and now they're told to lead others, maybe they were an engineer or a lawyer or even a doctor, because I work with individuals in profit and not-for-profit organizations. And as they are looking to improve, I will work with them, and I use a number of assessments. Many coaches aren't certified. I am certified by the International Coaching Federation, which also enables me with that certification to use a certain assessment, psychological assessments. Those psychological assessments enable me, I use them as a tool to provide insight into an individual's behavior. So it's more than just an individual who wants to hang up a shingle. Because of my master's in business and also my master's in behavioral science, what I'm able to do is to make those type of psychosocial assessments and provide those insights, but also I do it with a business base because I understand how organizations work.
So about managing expectations then, you're dealing with people in transition or people who should be in transition or teams in transition, is that right?
One of the things that I do not do as an executive coach is if, and transitions is an interesting word because a transition can also mean that an individual is failing in their job and therefore they're looking to bring in a coach to help that individual from failing. I don't work with those type of individuals. That's the wrong place for an executive coach. An executive coach should be brought in when an individual is looking to transition from a position that they have maybe moved into, where they might have more responsibility, where they might have a different demographic that they're working with, where they've expanded maybe the departments or functions, where they were in a technical position and now they're moving into a higher position of leadership. So when you look at those type of transitions, that's the best. And that's why a number of organizations use coaches. In fact, there are some companies that say that their whole cadre of individuals who are in the C-suite should go through some type of an executive coaching experience so that way they're able to sharpen their skills and improve their capabilities to work at new levels. You know, you could take, for example, take a CEO. Individuals are not born understanding how to operate as a CEO. They're not born knowing how to operate as a vice president of a certain organization. They are promoted into those positions many times because of their technical competence and because they have performed very well in a certain region. Now they are thrown into, it's like a fish who was swimming very well in certain waters, and now all of a sudden you are in a bigger pool. You have different challenges that you didn't have before. As a CEO, now you have to deal not only with your internal employee population, you have to deal with external constituencies. You have to deal with the press. You have to deal with the community. You and I know many situations we can think of where the CEOs or the heads of companies have failed in terms of their ability to communicate well, to talk well, to stand in a press conference and answer questions with an understanding of what is the real question that individuals are trying to get to. What are they really asking me? We've seen individuals who have to, say, testify in Washington, D.C., and all throughout the years we saw this. And they fail because they don't know how to communicate well externally. Those are individuals who should have had an executive coach that could help them to work with that. And there are all types of crises that usually come up, again, challenges that people have. Those are situations where you need an executive coach. I have a few situations. I coach a number of doctors, and sometimes an individual will feel, well, this person is a doctor, this person is a lawyer, and there's an assumed halo effect that we have, assuming that this person, because they have X amount of experience, can do anything. Well, they can't. As a matter of fact, they might be very good at doing a brain surgery, but in terms of managing a whole department or a medical department, that's a whole new competency and capability. So they're not able to do that well. So that's one of the things that an executive coach will help them with, to operate in a different environment and to improve and to evolve their capabilities to a whole new level of function and improvement and impact.
Have you been dealing with executives or senior levels from outside of the U.S.?
In fact, I have right now a number of clients in China and also in Germany, just to name a few, and also in Latin America. And so the challenges that individuals have to improve is something that it goes across the board. People have this no matter what country they happen to be in. And so it may come out in different ways, and this is where the assessments that I use come in, because I look at individuals' leadership capabilities regardless of where they are and begin to emit those type of assessments. And it's not totally based upon their cultural background, their ethnicity, or their gender. The number of the assessments that I use are validated to look at behaviors regardless of an individual's ethnicity, looking across ethnicity, across gender, and also across age. So I draw correlations with all of those different factors and elements to help me come to some conclusions and provide insights regarding what a person is challenged with right now, what his or her strengths are, what his or her development needs are, and what are some new capabilities that that person needs to take on so that way they can move to a higher level of effectiveness. That's really the coaching model that I use. And as I'm working with individuals in these confidential situations, most of my interviews are in person. I also use Skype now. In fact, one of the things that we're finding in the profession of coaching with global importance taking on more prominence is that coaches are using more interviews with Skype or telephone conferences or video conferences now than they had before. In fact, that's picking up over the last 10 years. So that's a transition that's taking place. And I know that in a number of the companies that I work with, where I'm working with them on cross-cultural issues, on leadership, and also with diversity issues, we find that people are working with teams across the world. So we have remote virtual teams, and people have to be effective in a virtual manner that they haven't been effective before. So that's a whole level of ambiguity, a whole new skill that is required, and the ability to impact people virtually using all of the new technologies, using social media, using the internet in different ways. That is something, as we're looking at the future is now, and we can't operate as if individuals are in a Taylorist type of factory remote level where everybody is just working in one building. That's no longer the case. Many times individuals will have people reporting to him or her, and they're all over the world. In fact, I have a number of client situations like that, where individuals have a team of people who are reporting to them. They're working in China, and individuals in Germany and Mexico are reporting to him or her.
Philip Berry, thank you so much for your time here, so valuable as it is, and your insight is just amazing. What is the best way to look for Philip Berry information?
The best way, first of all, is to Google me. My first name is Philip with one L. My last name is Berry, that's B as in black, E-R-R-Y. And so you can get access to my website and also email me from there at www.philipberryassociates.com. Also, you can email me at philip@philipberryassociates.com. But if you Google me, there's a lot of information there. And also, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. And so on LinkedIn, it's also another way that you can get access to me, Philip Berry or Philip Berry Associates. I'm also on Skype.
That's great. Okay, so Philip Berry, thank you very much for being our guest on Global Radio Talk Show. This is Ed Cohen signing off from Old Town in San Diego. Right.